live to homes all across Long Island. Welcome to yet another edition of Joe Salzone Live on 1240 AM WGBB. It's good to have you with us, coming to you this week from Studio A. Well, joining me in studio here, he's the host of Dave's Gone By, which can be heard Sunday night, 8 p.m., right here on this very station. Dave Lefkowitz is his name, and he joins us right across from me. Dave, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. Hope you're doing well, too.
It's good to have you with us here. Now, you and I, we've debated a lot off the air and on the air as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of issues that we agree on and disagree on. And one issue that we seem to agree and disagree on is Iraq. I want to read you something.
Okay.
Gary Mulholland wrote in the Wall Street Journal last week a commentary that labeled Hans Blix, who's the chief UN weapons inspector, essentially an imbecile. Now,
well, if George Bush can be called a moron by the Canadian aide to the Prime Minister, then I guess Blix can call this guy an imbecile. But
well, he cites the fact that Hans Blix has been involved with Iraq before. He's failed on numerous occasions. He's not seen as being an ally to America. He's seen as serving his own self-interest and the interests of the UN, which is, in the opinions of a lot of people, a grossly anti-American organization.
Well, sure. And anti-Israel, of course.
Yeah, and anti-Semitic. What are your thoughts?
Well, were you going to read that, or are you going to...
No, I'm just citing it.
Oh, okay.
I'll read you quotes if you want.
Well, I think a joke, or there was a joke in the program, I think about a week ago, that the situation with Iraq is that if Iraq says, no, we have no weapons, America's going to attack them. If Iraq says, yes, we have weapons, America will attack them because we've got to go in, and they're dangerous people with dangerous weapons. If Iraq lets UN inspectors in to look at their weapons, America will attack because we don't trust them and they're probably not showing where all their real weapons are.
Right.
So it's really all a dance. It's a moot thing. We're going in. It's just a question of when and whether the UN is in cahoots with these people, I don't know. It probably won't matter.
So it's a question of not if but when a war on Iraq will happen.
It's been brewing since Bush took office. You know.
But even before that, Bill Clinton himself had said in 98 that right after the inspectors were kicked out, that the only way that there will ever be peace in the Mideast is if Saddam gets out and if we have to remove him. So I think Clinton and Bush were on the same page, but I think different motives were involved.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, how many years ago were they saying the only way that Cuba's going to be safe is to get Castro out of there? And we've lived with him for however many years.
Do you think a war can be averted?
Depends what you mean by a war.
An all-out war with the intention of which, the goal, would be either one, a regime change, or two, to disarm Iraq.
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to disarm Iraq, at least from a terrorism viewpoint. If we fracture the government, then it'll just split into all these little coalition things that'll be attacking us in different ways anyway. I don't think we can avert some kind of conflict whether or not Iraq specifically provokes it. I think we want to be provoked into it. We're just waiting for the moment. We're waiting for some kind of smoking gun to just go in there and do what we want to do in the hopes that it will do the job,
right,
which we couldn't do 10 years ago.
In the early 90s, the UN Special Commission was headed by a man named Rolf Ekius, who was...
Oh, I know him well.
Thank you. Who?
In fact, I suffered from Rolf Ekius for about 3 months before the doctors cleared that up, yeah.
But they cleared up?
It's better now.
Well, that's good.
It still has a rash, but...
But the other Rolf Ekius, the serious one,
yeah.
He was the man that the U.S. backed as our candidate for the chief UN weapons inspector, and it's according to Gary Mulholland in his Wall Street Journal editorian, Iraq's champions in the UN security camp, Russia and France, vetoed Mr. Ekius as too aggressive. They put up Mr. Blix instead. After ineffectual opposition from the Clinton administration, Mr. Blix took over the present UN inspection organization in January of 2000.
So what you're saying is that this guy is not going to do the job.
That's what Gary's saying.
Right. So, but what is your question then regarding that?
What are your thoughts? If Hans Blix is ineffective, as Gary Mulholland states, and he is a former weapons inspector himself, then... Then whose side is Hans Blix on?
So then why doesn't the United States send its own commissioner then and not even trust the U.N.? Say to...
We don't trust the U.N.
Here are the people. Here's the team we want to send in. We don't trust wholly the U.N. people, their team, Blix and them. We want to send these guys. Will you let us have them in there, take them everywhere, show them everything you've got? And if I were Saddam Hussein, I would say, well, sure, can I send people to America and look at all your weapons?
Right.
Which, I don't know if he has the cojones to say that.
If Saddam Hussein, if it turns out he does not have any weapons of mass destruction, if
Bush won't believe him. That's the thing. We will go in anyway.
So you and I, we seem to agree, and I think I agree with this as well, that we are going to war. It'll be Gulf War number two. But I think the results will be a lot different than in 1990 when we took Iraq out of Kuwait, which the goal was to get Iraq out of Kuwait. The goal here, I think, is one of two things. The first being a regime change to completely remove Saddam Hussein and install a pro-American...
A puppet, yeah.
A puppet, exactly. A puppet
government. Who will let Halliburton and Harkin put their oil pipelines
into
the...
It's not about oil.
Okay.
It's not about... And the second option would be to disarm him like we do. I mean, we damaged his weaponry with the Gulf War. You know, his forces are not as strong as they were in the early 90s. He does not have the same amount of weapons.
Right, but we can probably keep doing that without going to all-out war. Just,
But that's what
target bombing, like the missiles they're aiming at Israel at the moment.
Is it fair to say then that the war in Iraq has already started?
Well, if it was started, it was started on September 11th, 2001. I mean,
right.
That was a declaration of war. It just wasn't a particular country.
It's interesting you bring that up because a lot of people do not see a connection between 9/11 and Iraq. When we know, we have proof of this, that some of the 9/11 hijackers were trained and stationed in Iraq, in Baghdad.
Right, well,
that's a pretty
and
big
I'm sure some
gun
of them
there.
But you know what? I'm sure some of them were also trained in Saudi Arabia. I'm sure some were in Qatar. And I'm sure a few might have been trained in Florida. We can't quite attack Florida, although we probably should when the mosquitoes are out in full force. But to say that, I'm not sure what you're getting at with that particularly. I mean, the war started... We had to find out who started the war. We're assuming it was Iraq. The Bush administration apparently doesn't want to assume that Saudi Arabia is involved, too, because they kind of want to be on our side, maybe, and be our friends.
There was a reason why Iraq's friends preferred Mr. Blix, according to Gary in his Wall Street Journal op-ed piece last week. He already had an unsurpassed record of failure in dealing with Saddam, from 81 to 97.
Oh, George Bush Sr. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, hold on there. Before we continue with that, the reason George Bush Sr. got out of Iraq is because he followed the UN, the resolution, and which said you're not going to remove Saddam from power, you're not going to kill him. And George Bush did just that. He got out as soon as we took Iraq out of Kuwait and backed off and took our forces out of there. You know, hindsight, of course, is 2020, and maybe that wasn't such a good idea. You know, Saddam hasn't exactly followed those resolutions either.
Apparently not, no. Okay, so I'll give you that. Maybe George Bush Sr. was bowing to UN pressure, which I find rather odd.
Right.
And just, it's again, the Bush is not really cleaning up business, getting into something, and in that case, being able at that point to get him,
right.
And they didn't. And now... I mean, we were talking about this earlier, this whole bin Laden thing. If you remember,
right.
After 9/11, Osama bin Laden was public enemy number one, going to get this man. He's the evil. He's the target. We're going to find him and get him.
That is still a goal. But the war is bigger than one man.
It's bigger, but it's amazing how very quickly they said, he's not really the issue.
Well, you know
he's
what,
somewhere. You know?
I wonder if that was said out of anger, out of frustration, that something... like 9/11 could have happened. Maybe it was,
But that is the other thing about any potential war with Iraq. And it could also happen, certainly, if there's no war and they develop all these weapons.
Right.
That's the catch-22, the Salam Charybdis that we're in. If there is a war, we will feel it in terrorism all over the world.
Right.
If there's not a war, just Israel will feel terrorism all over the world, and we'll get it now and then.
You know, on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, there were three simultaneous attacks in the Mideast, in Kenya, and one was fortunately, by an act of God,
yeah.
What was averted because the missiles, I mean, just missed the plan by just, I mean, a hair.
You get the feeling that guy's going to go back to his bosses, you know, the guy who fired that missile, and he's going to get his arms cut off. It's like, how could you miss? $2 million ICBM, you're pointing an airplane. How could you miss?
Let me ask you a question about 9/11, the day itself.
All right.
On the anniversary, all right, a day later, the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, George Bush, went in front of the UN and said, look, if you're not going to help us out here, if you're not going to support us, we're going to go into Iraq by ourselves or have some sort of coalition with England and some of our allies in that region of the world, and we're going to do it ourselves. So, you know, it's to hell with you,
right.
It'll be up to us.
Well,
he's changed that tone a little bit now.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think it's all about timing and context. I think I also told you before that had George Bush a month or 6 weeks or 2 months after the initial 9/11 attacks said, we're going in, we're going to attack Iraq. We're going to go and get Saddam and blow them all to hell. All of America would be, you know, waving flags, putting flags on cars and beeping and going. One, and if he had said, we're going to do it to Saudi Arabia, everybody would be waving flags. Any Arab country, we're going to go into Brooklyn and find a mosque and bomb it. There would be such anti-Arab hatred for some legitimate reason. It wouldn't even be logical. It would just be this visceral response. Like, Arabs attacked us, let's get Arabs.
Right.
But now a year passes. And what happens is people start to think, and people got safe again, and people got okay. So they figure, why is Bush going to Iraq? Now, why do you wait so long? Is there real provocation? Is he sure Iraq is responsible for 9/11? And if he's not, are we provoking a war really to go after nuclear weapons? Because a bunch of other countries have atomic and, I'm assuming, nuclear weapons. Or is it because they just didn't want us putting little oil fields in there, and that's why the Bush administration, it's so important to them to get this particular country?
Well, first of all, there is still an overwhelming number of Americans who want to see a war. Let me rephrase that. We don't want a war. I don't think anyone really wants a war, but we're left with no choice. The UN has failed. They don't follow through on the resolutions. The weapons inspectors, they're going to fail. I think Blix, I think Gary Milhotin, in this very intriguing Wall Street Journal piece, says flat out that Hans Blix will be one of the reasons why the UN fails yet again.
Right.
If we cannot trust the United Nations, if we can't trust our so-called allies, then are we going into this alone? And if so, can we succeed?
Well, we'll always have England. Yeah.
Right.
And maybe Australia, in kind of a backhanded way, Canada, too, even though, I mean, they fired the guy, or the guy resigned.
Right.
Who called Bush a moron. So obviously, they want to keep the United States in their good graces. So we'll have some Canadian Mounties, you know, waving their little pipes at the planes going over Iraq. So we're not going to lose everybody. And Europe, Eastern Europe, Western, already despises America. We are so loathed around the world right now.
Okay.
9/11 notwithstanding, that we lost them anyway.
Right. All right, more with Dave Lefkowitz in just a moment. We'll talk a little bit about 9/11 coming up on Joe Salzone Live. Welcome back. It's great to have you with us on a beautiful Saturday evening on Long Island. I'm Joe Salzone, and we continue now our conversation with the host of Dave's Gone By. He is Dave Lefkowitz. I almost got your name there for a second.
Yeah, I know.
The teleprompter doesn't work all the time.
And what time is it on Sunday night?
It's on Sunday night, 8 to 9 o'clock.
That's
I was getting
correct.
To that.
Okay.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about 9/11. Actually, 14 months after the day itself, George W. Bush finally is going to begin a nonpartisan, quote-unquote, commission as to find out what exactly caused 9/11 and how we could be prevented,
right.
Similar to the Warren Commission after the Kennedy assassination.
Which did so well, yeah.
It did very well, didn't it? Christopher Hitchens, in his nationally syndicated column, wrote, why is a proven liar and a wanted man in charge of the 9/11 investigation? He's speaking of Dr. Henry Kissinger of the Nixon administration. There you have it there. I'll tell you one thing. Mr. Hitchens makes some very, very good arguments as to why, first of all, Henry Kissinger should be in jail, and two, why Bush is making a big mistake. And I want
to know your take on this, because, I mean, as a fairly right-wing conservative Republican, but also Kissinger is from about two eras ago.
Right.
And I personally like to know the case against Kissinger, because I'm a little rusty on him. He's just been a pundit for 20 years. I don't know how he suddenly stepped back into the international limelight. So please, let me know what Hitchens is saying and what your thoughts are about him and the case against him.
Well, as Hitchens writes, and I look, I agree with him. I'm not a fan of Henry Kissinger. I think he's a brilliant man. I think he's a good statesman. But his character is lacking of substance. Let me tell you this. Watergate is the most obvious of
yeah.
examples, but there were so many others.
People who have the thing against Kissinger, it's all about Vietnam. It isn't so much Watergate they pin on Nixon and all those people. Kissinger, they hold as kind of a war criminal for actions, you know, in Southeast Asia.
Well, it says here, when in office, Henry Kissinger organized massive deceptions of Congress and public opinion. The most notorious case concerned the secret bombing of Cambodia and Laos and the unleashing of unconstitutional methods by Nixon and Kissinger to repress dissent from this illegal and atrocious policy. Now, keep in mind, Christopher Hitchens is a liberal, all right?
Right.
I'm a conservative, and I agree with him.
Yeah.
He's making some good points.
Right, but I think the purpose of any politician, maybe it started heavily in the 1970s, but it's all spin.
Right.
It's all keeping things secret and not letting people know until the last minute and boosting public opinion in a certain direction, whatever the actual total facts happen to be. So if Kissinger is guilty of that, he's just guilty of being a politician.
Well, it's a little deeper than that. I'm going to say Christopher Hitchens now.
Sure.
Henry Kissinger, in his second career as a falsifier, it says here, pretty strong words, Kissinger appropriated the records of his time at the State Department and took them on a truck to the Rockefeller family estate in New York. He has since been successfully sued for the return of much of this property, but meanwhile he produced for profit three volumes of memoirs that purported to give a full account of his tenure. Which essentially, what he's accusing...
He lied in his autobiography.
What he's accusing is not only did he lie, but he stole certain things from certain documents from the Nixon era.
Right. Are they public documents? Or
no.
Well,
they are classified. They are not. You know, they were purposely classified for the very reason that they didn't want, even after, you know, posthumously, Nixon did not want the truth to be out.
Well, so and but hold on. I'm sorry, but I'm a little confused here. Were the documents classified? Why were they initially classified? To keep them secret? By whom? Kissinger stole them because he wanted to keep them further secret? I'm lost.
Well, and I share in your confusion because this does seem to be kind of not only contradictory, but a little confusing. What Hitchens is accusing Kissinger of is not only were those documents sealed for, like I said, the very purpose of never knowing what they were, the public never knowing.
Right.
Apparently what Kissinger did for, I guess, his own monetary benefit...
He opened them up and changed them around
he published them.
Right.
Which, I guess, you know, depending on what they are, and I have not seen these, I'm not too sure what they are, but it could put in jeopardy our national security. Would Kissinger do that? I don't know.
I honestly have enough facts to really comment about this, because it's still confusing me a little bit. It doesn't make quite a lot of sense that Kissinger would steal this kind of material just to make it public, even if there were a financial gain. I mean, he's a person who could make six figures just doing speaking engagements. So what the purpose of all that was, unless he felt, or who was keeping them classified in the first place? There's just not enough information about this
right.
for me to really comment.
All right. So the bottom line, as Christopher Hitchens writes, is that Kissinger is not the right man, and he should be on trial for war crimes.
Well, that again, because of keeping the bombing of Laos. What is your feeling on this, first of all?
What is my feeling?
Yeah, not Hitchens, you.
I personally, I try not to make an analysis without knowing all the information. With when it comes to Kissinger, it's a tough call. It is a tough call. I think, first of all, I think all the information needs to be presented. Without jeopardizing anyone, it needs to be presented to the American people. Let us make the decision. And if it turns out that he did something during the Nixon administration to something illegal, then he should be put on trial.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking more in terms of having Kissinger be the go-to man on this whole Iraq thing.
Well, you know, I did say he is a good statesman. He's just lacking character. And you need character, I think, to be a great statesman, like the Churchills of the world, or like the Ronald Reagans, the
Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, a great character?
Yes.
Okay, what makes you think that?
I have it written down here. Let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on a little. Let's lighten things up here.
Ronald Reagan didn't even remember what a character was in the last four years.
All right.
But let's move on. You want to talk about what?
I can easily talk about your guy, Clinton.
He's not my guy. He was a good president.
He wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
He was a terrible president.
He was a terrible president in the last couple of years because the Republicans kept him tangled up with all this impeachment nonsense.
I know.
He slept with a girl.
It's a vast right-wing conspiracy. I know. All the Republicans are responsible for all the ills of the world. I know.
They were responsible for killing a year and a half of his presidency with wasted time and nonsense.
Oh, he killed a year and a half of his own presidency. All right,
but that wasn't what we're going to talk
about. We're going to move on. We have just a few moments together. Lizzie Grubman was released from a 60-day sentence after serving for 37 days on Friday from prison after mowing down 16 club goers in the Hamptons. What do you think?
But nobody died, right?
No one died. Well, there were no deaths.
Even so, it was depraved indifference to human life. It's kind of weird that they only gave her 60 days to begin with. And I don't remember, was she intoxicated or semi-intoxicated or just, didn't care? Because that might make a difference, too.
Didn't care. It was a gross indifference of life.
Well, what can I say? I mean, obviously, there are people in jail for smoking pot for 4 years because it was their first or third offense and didn't hurt a soul.
Right.
And here's this woman who hit people with her car and just tried to get away, and she got a month and a half in jail. Nothing really to say about that. Of course it's silly. Of course it's wrong. Of course she should have been punished a bit more. I don't know what community service she has further to do, it should be some.
All right, Dave Lefkowitz, thanks for coming down here tonight. He is the host of Dave's Gone By, which you can hear, of course, every single Sunday night, 8 p.m. on GBB.
GBB 1240. Thank you for having me.
No problem.